Hi, everybody. It's Dr. Peter Osborne with the Functional Health Summit 2015, and I'm super excited today about our interviewer, Craig Ballantyne, the founder of Turbulence Training. He's an author for Men's Health. He runs something called Internet Independence, and he's just he's a very, very well-known and well-trusted health expert in the community, and I'd like to welcome you, Craig, and thank you for being here with us today.
Thank you, Peter. I really love talking to you, and quite frankly, I wish I was asking you the questions because I'm always so excited to hear your passionate information and learn from you.
Oh, well, thanks for that. I appreciate it. I would love to get your take today in this call. So many people go to the gym. You know, they burn treadmill for 30 minutes or 45 minutes, and they do the standard old-fashioned kind of weight training for another 30 to 60 minutes. Can we talk a little bit about the cardio myth?
Yeah, I'd love to.
So what is it? Tell me a little bit about some of the research, because I saw one of your posts the other day about how prolonged cardio can actually create the opposite impact of building muscle. Can you go into the science a little bit behind that?
Yeah, so I mean the biggest problems with cardiovascular exercise is most people think that it's really helpful for weight loss, and it's really not very effective for weight loss. So there's three main studies that I always share with people, and the first one is from 2007. It's from the journal Obesity, and there was a research study in America where they had men and women do an hour of cardio 6 days a week for 50 weeks, so that's 300 hours of cardio, and they ended up losing on average 5 pounds, so that's 50 hours or more to lose a pound of weight, which is unacceptable for anybody. You know, nobody has that amount of time. Now, the second study found that some people even gain weight, and this was a British study, and they call these people compensators. And what a compensator is someone who goes and does a cardio workout and then eats an extra 300 calories per day because they're so hungry from the cardiovascular exercise. And this doesn't seem to happen when people do short burst workouts, which is the comparison they did in the third study, which is an Australian study, from Professor Steve Boucher. And one of our friends, Kate Vidulich, a mutual friend of ours, was actually one of the research assistants in this study. I didn't know that until recently, but she monitored people's training. And what they did was they had people do slow cardio or interval training for a short amount of time, I believe it was 12 to 15 weeks, three workouts per week. The slow cardio did 40 minutes of cardio, the interval training did 20 minutes of interval training 3 times a week, and only the interval training group was able to lose fat, specifically belly fat, and so that just shows you the superiority of that short burst workouts. And what you mentioned before about muscle mass, and I would love to talk about how important muscle mass is for everybody, not just young men, but how it's absolutely essential for women and anybody getting older, because that's what determines your function and your health when you're older, and your ability to stay out of the hospital. But anyways, if you do long, slow cardiovascular exercise, that sends a signal to your body to impair your muscle growth, and it makes it very, very difficult for somebody to gain lean muscle mass with cardiovascular exercise. So that is, the biggest knock against it, those three studies and, that fact that it's just not conducive to building lean muscle mass and strength for people that they need when they're 60, 70, 80, and 90 years old.
I mean, that's so amazing, because so many people, and especially elderly, they try to recapture their jogging days, or they try to recapture, they'll buy the treadmill at Academy, or they'll buy the elliptical runners, and they'll just be turning like a wheel, like a hamster in a wheel, expecting that they're going to be doing some benefits. So what you're saying is that research shows that not only were they not able to lose fat in these studies, but it actually hampered or hindered their muscle. Can you talk a little bit more about that? I think that's a great topic.
Right. So when you do cardiovascular exercise, it increases a hormone in your body called cortisol. And when you increase cortisol, that is a catabolic hormone. And what that means is it's the opposite of anabolic. So people have heard the phrase anabolic steroids. And what that means is Anything that's anabolic in your body means it builds up your body. And anything that is catabolic in your body breaks down your body. So cortisol breaks down muscle tissue. And that's what happens when you do cardiovascular exercise. And for men, if you do a lot of cardiovascular exercise, you also lower your testosterone levels, which are anabolic, which help you build muscle. So that's why you see very skinny marathon runners, because they have a very catabolic environment in their body. And this extends, Peter, which is really important here, to beyond muscle tissue, to joint tissue as well, which is why people get so many injuries from cardiovascular exercise and end up in the physiotherapy office all the time, and why runners have bad knees at 55 or 60 years old and they can't, you know, do this exercise anymore. And that's why elliptical machines are so popular, because people think they still need to do cardio, and they're using, but they can't run because they've, you know, worn down their knees too much with catabolic exercise. And so they've gone on to the elliptical machine because it's easier. But that's really just still not the best type of exercise that somebody should be doing.
I mean, that, you know, you hear so many kind of long distance trainers saying, giving the advice of run through the pain, it'll go away. And to me, that would always
dangerous to long, slow, boring cardio. And, you know, the number one reason that I won't do a marathon right now is because there's research out that shows the type of person who actually dies in a marathon, and the rate is 1 in 100,000, so it's not like, you know, there's 5 people dropping dead in every marathon, but there's been a couple people dropping dead at marathons in Toronto. And the average statistics for the person who drops dead at a marathon is a 39-year-old man who is pushing hard at the end. And I'm a 39-year-old man, and I would push really hard at the end. So that's, you know, one of the main reasons why I'm not going to do a marathon anytime soon. It can stay on the bucket. It's not on my bucket list, but it could stay on there if it was for a while. But, you know, that goes back to what you were saying. You know, people at the end of a marathon, I mean, they're hobbling around like they've been injured. And even half marathons and 10Ks, I mean, you have to understand, you know, people that are listening need to understand that you're doing the same thing over and over again for thousands of repetitions in one of these workouts. And I use this analogy, Peter. It's kind of like when you maybe saw a cartoon when you were a kid of somebody holding a magnifying glass up and directing and concentrating the sun's rays, like maybe on a little toy soldier and melting him. That's what you do during exercise. So let's say you have, you know, a leg that's slightly longer than the other, you have poor flexibility in your right hamstring, and then you go and do thousands and thousands of repetitions in an exercise session. Well, you're magnifying that biomechanical problem. So that's why you're going to end up in the physiotherapy office or in the chiropractor's office getting treatment, because you have taken a little injury and concentrated it into a big injury. And, you know, runners, quite frankly, are, you know, borderline insane, because if, you know, I talked to my chiropractor and he's like, yeah, I can barely get these people to stop running. I mean, they're running through, you know, Achilles tears, they're running through bad knees, they're running through everything, and they will just go to a chiropractor or a physiotherapist to find a way to mask the symptoms so that they can go and keep on running. And I wish people would reconsider.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more with you. I see a lot of that in my own office, and you try to have the conversation to convince them they need to make a change, and they're just so passionate about running that they refuse to listen to it, and then they end up not being able to run in the end anyway, because they become so injured that it's kind of a hindrance on their ability overall.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's either take 3 weeks off now or take 3 months off, you know, in a month from now, or even worse. And people just, they just won't get it.
So you mentioned something a little bit ago about, you know, how important it is to maintain and build muscle, especially in women as we age. Can we dive a little bit into that whole conversation?
Yeah, I mean, for a long, long time, people have thought that, you know, when I was a trainer full-time back in 2004, 2005, you know, all these balance exercises were so popular, you know, standing on this wobble board and this and that, thinking that, you know, we were serving the 50 and older marketplace, and people thinking that this was how you prevent, you know, losing your balance or how, you know, you prevent falls. And what research shows is that it's simple strength. It's the ability to squat up and down that helps people prevent falls. And so at the end of the day, you know, I want my mom to get stronger. She's 72 or 73 years old, and I want her to use resistance training exercise because that is going to allow her to be most functional in 10 years from now. That's going to allow her to walk the dog. That's going to allow her to go outside and do her gardening. It's not standing on a silly balance ball or something like that. It's just getting strong. And so if someone has not taken up strength training yet, please do so. All you need is 10 to 15 minutes twice a week, and you can make a dramatic improvement in your strength, in your balance, in your body composition, and in your bone density when you choose the right exercises, when you choose what are called multi-muscle compound exercises such as squats. Those are the most important exercise that you could do. And yeah, they're a little bit tough, but you're going to get the most bang for your buck from it. You're not going to have to be in a gym for a long time. In fact, you can do your strength training at home with some dumbbells or a kettlebell, and you can get incredible results even with bodyweight exercise.
So that you said, you know, let's just take somebody who's, you know, 50 plus. They got an old knee injury. They have a hard time doing squats. What kind of a squat would you have them do? How would you have them scale that?
Sure, that's a great question. So, you know, I've worked with people who've even busted their kneecaps and coming back from rehabilitation on that. And so what we started with her was double leg hip extensions lying on the ground. And if someone is overweight, I can put them through such an intense workout with them lying on a mat in 20 minutes. If they'll be sweating, they'll have strengthened their entire body. And so we would start with, you know, the very first exercise is a double leg hip extension where you bridge up, you really squeeze your glutes, and you learn to activate those muscles, which is really important for a lot of people that, you know, have never done any type of resistance training in the past. And in fact, if you're familiar at all with golf, Tiger Woods just recently returned and he hurt his back again. So he just came back from a back surgery. And he hurt his back again, and the reason why he said he hurt his back in the latest tournament was because his glutes were not firing. He didn't fire his glutes during the swing. And when you do double leg hip extensions, that's what you're doing. You're firing your glutes, but most people don't know how to activate those muscles, which are, you know, what we call our butt. So then we'll graduate into single leg hip extensions, and then we'll come up and do some type of assisted squat. We might reduce the range of motion. We might, you know, do a wall squat or put the ball in between our back and the wall and do a squat that way and just squat down as far as we can. And at the same time, we'll be doing stability ball leg curls to strengthen the hamstrings and helping the person lose weight, because research shows that the number one factor in reducing knee pain is to lose weight, is to not have excess body weight. So, you know, those three things, increasing the range of motion, building the hamstrings, and losing weight will help reduce people's knee pain. And then we'll move into, you know, deeper and deeper squats until we get down to parallel. We might use a barbell if somebody's strong. We might just have them hold a dumbbell at chest level in a goblet squat, which is an exercise that I do when I travel to hotel rooms all the time, and hotel gyms, I mean to say. And then we would get into single leg exercises. We would start with something called a split squat or a step up. And these are exercises you can do up against the wall so you can hold the wall for balance. And we would just continue to build strength, particularly in the back of the body and the back of the legs, which is so important because that's where our day-to-day strength comes from. It's not our push-up muscles. It's not our bicep curl muscles. It's our hamstrings, our glutes, our low back, and our upper back, where we really want to be strong as we age.
So those are great tips. I'm going to go back to kind of a similar question with the same kind of person. So, you know, you would take somebody who doesn't have the ability to squat, and you just kind of take them through some specialized exercises just to make them aware of that their muscles can contract and kind of to create a body awareness. And then you kind of advance them up through. What's kind of the time frame that you might expect somebody who's basically can't do a squat to their ability to become able to do a full squat, you know, just a bodyweight squat, full range of motion?
That's a great question. It's a little bit difficult to answer because it really depends on, you know, what is the body weight of the person, the body composition. Now, if somebody is, you know, if it's a 50-year-old woman with high body fat who's never done any of these exercises before, it's going to take her a little bit longer. Whereas if it's it could be an overweight male who had a very athletic background, and he would obviously take much shorter amount of time. But it shouldn't take too long. I mean, we should be able to move. In the first session, we would spend probably mostly down on the mat. And here's another cue for people, a really great tip, is that research shows that if you touch the muscle that should be working, so, you know, obviously I wouldn't touch a client's glutes, but, you know, I would instruct the client to touch their own glutes. And when you do that, it increases the amount that you can activate those muscles. So you're able to say, oh, now I feel that, because there's nothing more frustrating for me when I'm training a new client and they say, where should I feel this exercise? That's when I know that I failed. I did not properly explain to the client where they should be feeling and how they should be activating particular muscles. So we fix that and we go back and we say, okay, touch these muscles and you'll be able to get a good handle on it. And by the end of the first session, you know, someone who's an overweight, untrained individual will be able to do the single leg hip extensions. And so next time when they come in, they'll be a little bit sore in those glutes, but, you know, we will probably do a very, very small range of motion body weight squatting. And we really have to spend a lot of time on it, because most people, when they think of a squat exercise, they think of bending their knees, but it's really pushing their hips back first as if they were sitting back into a chair. So that's something that we cue people on. We have them squat over a chair, sit back into a chair. Sit back as if you're sitting back onto the toilet. And when you do that, you sit back and push your hips back first. You don't bend your knees. Because if you bend your knees, you your center of gravity goes forward, you lose your balance, and you put excess stress on your knees. Now, when you push your hips back, you put more of the load over those big muscle groups, and a little bit more stress moves off of your knees. And that's really important. So that's why we do the wall squats. It's easy to push your hips back and lean back and load the back of the body. Now, we could probably get through a bunch of the squats in the second session, and therefore in the third session when they come in next week, you know, to start again, because we'd probably just be on two sessions a week at the start for strength training, I'd say by the third session we'd be able to get into some nice bodyweight squats at almost every level.
Wow, so that fast. So I, the reason I ask you that question is because I get, you know, I get a lot of patients who come in and they, you know, they're trying to do things at home. Maybe they don't have somebody guiding them, and they're maybe a couple of months in and they really haven't still gotten a full range of motion squat down. So you're saying it could potentially happen in as little as three sessions if they have the right guidance.
Absolutely, and I mean, it really comes down to that. That's perfect phrase. It's the right guidance. And you just need someone who knows how to squat. I mean, in most cases, it's going to be a good trainer, but I know a lot of trainers who are just, you know, fresh out of the training certification that don't know how to squat. I mean, if you know, if there's any trainers listening and you've never squatted before, you shouldn't be teaching a squat. You should go back and learn from a good trainer, but it doesn't necessarily have to be a trainer. It needs to be somebody who knows how to squat properly. And they can show you, and, you know, strength training is skill training. It's like juggling. You learn how to juggle, and you can probably do it pretty quickly, but it does include a lot of neuromuscular coordination, which means your brain controls your movement, and the more athletic you are, the easier this is going to be because you have better body awareness. But, you know, if you don't have an athletic background, don't be put off by it because, again, a good trainer can really get you up to speed quite quickly when, you know, they're really interested in you and they care. And there are so many great trainers out there that will be able to help people listening.
Great, great, great points. I want to ask you another question, kind of on the similar note in terms of time frames. One of the things I see in a lot of females is they begin an exercise program you know, they might be doing high intensity interval training, and they get frustrated because they're not losing weight as fast as they should, even though they're implementing, you know, 10 to 15 minutes of high intensity exercise 4 to 5 days a week. Where would you guide that person? What would you say, these are the things that you need to be focused on to break through that plateau?
Yeah, well, you know, here I become very unpopular with my advice, but, you know, the answer is we really need to look at somebody's nutrition. We need to take a look and have them do a nutrition journal. We need to make sure that they're not forgetting anything, because that is, at the end of the day, the bottom line. Like, even in research studies, and I just read a review of this on the weekend, because I was having the same conversation with one of my editors at Women's Health. I write articles for them all the time, and she asked pretty much the same question. And I pointed her to a study that showed, even in these nutrition studies where people are supposed to record their diet intake, the subjects always underreport how many calories they eat per day. So these are people in a nutrition study doing a nutrition journal, and then they monitor them. They have them stay in the lab for 24 hours or something like that, and they monitor them, and they actually find they still underreport the number of calories that they're eating. And so that's really what it does come down to. You cannot out-train a bad diet unless you're a young guy. And what that means is you really have to be diligent and focused with your nutrition. You can still enjoy your favorite foods on a limited basis, but you need to be honest and make sure that you are not having temptations that are throwing you off track every day. So you need to find the obstacles in your way and come up with a couple solutions to overcome, whether it's afternoon eating or night eating or sugar addiction or whatever it is. But the bottom line is, if someone's not losing weight and they're exercising consistently, then it is the nutrition that is the bottleneck.
Now, you know, I don't know who says that that's unpopular advice. I think it's probably some of the best and most sound advice I've heard.
Well, no one likes that they're not, you know, because everybody thinks they're dieting hard, and nobody likes to be told they're going to have to cut back, you know, on those extra treats they're giving themselves.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I like to say it's okay to be hungry, even if you're, you know, if you're trying to get to another level, it's even especially okay to be hungry. We've kind of forgotten what that's like with meals every few hours.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the morning fast. It's easiest for me personally, just because, you know, I'm just so busy in the morning, and so I like that approach for losing body weight.
What do you think about intermittent fasting as a tool to accelerate body fat loss?
I think it's fantastic, because we've run 22 transformation contests in my business at Turbulence Training, and we have had most of our winners use something called Eat Stop Eat, which is an intermittent fasting program by my friend Brad Pilon. But there's so many other popular ones out there these days. And what I didn't realize was how much people were going to love it, because it just made their days so less busy. They didn't have to prepare, you know, six meals like the bodybuilders do, you know, recommend. And they don't have to wash, you know, dishes from six meals like all the Tupperware and that stuff. So people just loved it for the convenience. They were able to get more done in their day at work and in their home life, and they were able to lose more body fat with the intermittent fasting. So, you know, provided somebody has no contraindications for it, it's one of my favorite approaches for weight loss.
Can you give us the 5-minute elevator speech? What exactly, for those who are listening who don't know what intermittent fasting is, can you kind of go into that a little bit?
Yeah, so there's actually quite a few variations of it. And my friend Brad Pilon, his Eat Stop Eat is one 24-hour fast per week, where you are one if you want to maintain body weight, and two if you want to lose body weight. And so what that means is you would have dinner at 6 o'clock on Wednesday night, and then you wouldn't eat any food until dinner on Thursday night at 6 o'clock. So you still eat every day, but you just go a 24-hour period where you do not consume any calories, but you drink water and tea and coffee and that sort of stuff. So that is one version. Then there's another one Now, again, with Brad's, you only do it once per week if you want to maintain weight and up to twice a week if you want to lose weight. Then there's the everyday 16-hour fast and 8-hour eating window, which is the popular 16-8 approach. And that's probably even more common because people will, again, like me, they'll maybe have dinner. If you have a decently early dinner and you're up for a couple hours after that, and then you sleep 8 hours, and then you're only up for, you know, 2 to 3 hours in the morning, and then you can eat. And that's really quite convenient. So that's a 16-hour period between your dinner and your breakfast. I don't love to try and fast during the day when I'm awake, as the afternoon goes on, but I can be up for 6-7 hours in the morning before I really need something to eat. And I can even have my exercise session right before that. I don't need to lose weight, so I don't do it very often. But on a regular basis even, I probably go 14 hours between dinner and my breakfast. So that is intermittent fasting. And, it's so different than the 1990s approach of, you know, 6 meals per day. And, you know, you need to be regimented with your eating. But I think the proof is in the numbers. It's just become so popular. It's a worldwide phenomenon. You know, there's a really popular book in the UK called the 5-2 diet, which is very similar to Brad Pilon's. And, you know, there's an 8-hour diet from Men's Health. And so you're just seeing this stuff everywhere. And it wouldn't still be around this many years after it became popular if it didn't work. It really just is convenient for a lot of people. And it's almost like this just sigh of relief. It's like, oh, now I don't have to be so obsessive compulsive with, you know, eating on an alarm clock. That just doesn't work for people in today's day and age.
Yeah, I personally follow a 16-hour, 8-hour kind of guide because it's easy for me to do. I get up in the morning and I go work out first before I do anything else. And by that time, it's been 16 hours. But I find it extremely effective. I never battle weight, and I've had a history of that. I was actually one of the people you mentioned earlier who, you know, for me, doing long bouts of cardio, actually, I had love handles the first time I ever tried to marathon train.
And, oh, wow.
It was because I lost 20 pounds of muscle in the 6 months that I spent training for the half marathon. And, you know, my love handles grew to great proportions, and it took me a year to recover from that whole ordeal. So for me, I'm the opposite of a marathon runner for sure.
Right, yeah. I mean, and you're fit, man. I love hanging around you and being inspired by your fitness level.
Oh, thanks. What is it that you would say if you could say, look, these are the top three things that a person really, really should be focused on if they're trying to break through a weight loss plateau? Because, you know, you're in charge of Turbulence Training, which is one of my favorite online programs for home exercise workouts. You know, I recommend it to a lot of my patients. So what are the three things that you see typically in your industry, in your business, that you see people are messing up with, that if you could just share with our audience, that hopefully maybe that'll give them something to think about to improve what they're doing?
Yeah, so I mean, at the basic level, it's not intense, you know, not having intense training. So relying on slow cardio, relying on really high repetition resistance training, which is not going to give you the strength, the bone density, and the fat burning results. And even the New York Times, you know, just recently on the 28th of January, they did a review of a research study, and the study was done at the University of Alabama. And what they found was they had three groups of women. One did cardio, one didn't do any exercise at all, and one did resistance training. And the resistance training group had the greatest results in weight loss and in maintaining their metabolism. So people need to switch over from low-intensity exercise to high-intensity exercise, both interval training and resistance training. And you can even do that in a hybrid of body weight training, which is what we do in our Home Workout Revolution program. Now, on the diet side, it is probably cutting back liquid calories, because most people consume so many hidden liquid calories, they just don't know about it. And if they don't, then it's probably cutting back on sugar, which not only leads to increased calorie intake, but also leads to people eating more. I mean, once people get started eating some sugar, it's so difficult for so many people to stop. But, you know, the calorie amount in stuff at Starbucks is just outrageous. And also in the large sodas that are now available. I remember when I was a kid coming from Canada where we had these little cans of soda. They were not like the cans of soda that they have now in Canada that they've always had in America. You know, so we had 280 milliliter sodas, which is just over a cup. And in America, they had 333 milliliters of soda, these bigger cans. But now everything is, you know, almost a liter. And if you're drinking a liter, you know, four cups of soda a day, that is probably about 500 calories. And you are just really going to be in a lot of trouble that way. And so that is the second thing, is cutting liquid calories or sugar out of your diet. And that really will just help people accelerate their fat loss quickly. And the third thing is having social support and accountability. So this is actually one of my five pillars of transformation. And people need to have other people supporting them. There's really good people out there in the world. I know this in this media negativity world that we live in where everything is bad news, bad news, bad news. There's so many good people out there who want to help and support you. And research shows that if you check into a weight loss forum online, the more often you do so, the better results you're going to get. Research shows that if you work out and exercise with a partner who's getting the same results that you want, then you have a better chance of getting results. And so you really need to put yourself in an environment. And that's why, you know, Fit Body Bootcamp and, you know, boot camps in general are so effective for many people, because it's this camaraderie. And you train at CrossFit, I believe, and you know the camaraderie of people in there. It keeps people motivated. It keeps people coming back and stops them from dropping out. And so there's all, you know, sorts of ways. You know, even if you want to exercise at home, you can exercise with my follow-along videos where, you know, it's like having me in your house and me as your social support every day. So that's like kind of this hidden thing that people don't recognize. They try and do it all on their own, and it's very, very difficult, and they drop out. But if they have some type of social support or accountability, they're going to have better results.
Oh, excellent, excellent advice. You mentioned something for me. If I don't have the support, it's going to be a much weaker workout. I just won't work as hard. I won't push as hard, and I won't get out of it what I would typically get if I were around a couple of other guys who I typically work out with, who push me to make me work harder and challenge me every day.
Right. They bring out the honesty in you, the honest effort.
Yep, absolutely. Well, this has been really great, Craig. I really do appreciate you sharing your wisdom and knowledge with the audience. If people want to find a little bit more out about Turbulence Training or Home Workout Revolution or any of the other programs you have, where's the best place that we can send them to find you?
I think the best place to find me and have, you know, ask me any questions is on my Facebook page. We have over 250,000 fans there. It's at turbulencetrainingfanpage.com. And if somebody wants a bodyweight exercise program, which is, you know, the most convenient, and it's our follow-along videos, they can go to homeworkoutrevolution.com, and we will show you how to do these high-intensity exercise workouts in just a few minutes a day with absolutely no equipment.
Awesome, awesome. Well, we're going to put a link underneath the interview for anybody who wants to go and check those things out. And again, Craig, thank you again for being here and sharing what you know.
I appreciate it, Peter. I look forward to doing another call like this, and I look forward to turning the tables and asking you a lot of questions, because I have quite a few for you.
All right. Anytime, my friend.
Great stuff.
All right. Take care.
Thanks, Peter.